Advancement Biblical Style, an exposition of Genesis chapter 41, verses 1 through 40. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, October the 27th, 2010.
Several years ago, I was going somewhere with my older brother, and we were driving in the car, and he said, "I need to show you this book." And he said, "You might want to read it." So he gave me this book, and I looked at his little small book, and the name of it was Who Moved the Cheese? I said, "Where did you get this book?" And he said, "Well, they gave it to us at work." It was one of those books that corporations were using and giving to their employees, and it was all about how to get ahead. And the whole premise of the book was, what do you do when somebody moves the cheese? Meaning, if they make a change, how do you respond to change? Are you the type that sniffs and scurries, or are you the type that hem and haw? And they paid this person thousands of dollars to travel all over the country and teach this book and help your employees understand they ought to sniff and scurry rather than hem and haw whenever change comes and all this kind of stuff. Well, it was all about how to get ahead. You may remember another book that was just a little bit ahead of that called How to Swim with the Sharks. It was all about how to move up, how to get ahead. And the basic idea of all those books is that you're going to have to kick and claw and fight and get your way to the top, because you're going to have to look out for you, because nobody else is going to look out for you. Now, I hope you understand that as Christians, we are called to walk to the beat of a different drummer. We are called to a different standard of things. We are to approach life in a totally different manner from a totally different perspective. We don't live according to the standards of the world. We live according to a divine economy. The word economy comes from the Greek, and it means house rule or house law. There is a worldly economy and there is a divine economy. There's a worldly law and a divine law. How do you look at the world around you? How do you react to the world around you? What are the rules that govern? You and I, as the people of God, are called to live according to a biblical standard in every area of life. We're not given the freedom to departmentalize our lives and say, well, that's business. And so when it comes to business, we need to act like this. But in the church, we act like this. We don't have the freedom to do that. Who I am at church and the perspective I use as I interpret what's going on around me and how I respond to people and how I respond to change and all of that needs to be the same way I react in my work environment to change and respond to people and the way I interpret and look at life. I'm supposed to be the same wherever I am. I'm supposed to be a follower of Christ everywhere, not just at church, not just when I'm gathered with the church folk in a couple of days a week, but at all times, the things of God, the Word of God, the perspective of Scripture is supposed to guide me in everything that I do. In the divine economy, it's not about our own glory. It's not about seeking our own protection. It's not about trying to get ahead from our own perspective. In the divine economy, our concern is the glory of God. Our concern is that we honor God with everything. We honor God with our lives. We honor God with our words. Everything about us, whatever you do for the glory of God. Peter sums it up this way in 1 Peter 5 and verse 6. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time. Humble yourselves under God's mighty hand, and in due time he'll lift you up, or as the New Living Translation has it, humble yourselves under the mighty power of God, and in his good time he will honor you. That's how it works in God's economy. We remain faithful, we remain true, we remain obedient to him, doing our best to follow his will, and we leave exaltation, we leave advancement, we leave achievement in his hand. Our driving concern is not that we get ahead, is not that we accumulate stuff, but that we honor him with whatever we have, with wherever we've been placed, and we leave promotions and advancement and all of that stuff in his hand. One great example of this is found in Genesis 41 in the example of Joseph. And that's what I want us to have in our mind as we walk through this chapter together. Joseph's life was a roller coaster. The favorite son of a powerful, wealthy patriarch who gets sold into slavery, who gets taken down to Egypt and sold again. He finds himself in the house of Potiphar, and then through trumped up charges, he finds himself in prison. And in prison, God even favored him there because he was still faithful and true to try to order his life according to the ways of God. And so he's put in charge in the prison. Wherever he was, God honored him, but it was a roller coaster ride. It was up and down and twist and turn. It was not the kind of thing that he expected. It was not the life that he expected to live. Yet through it all, he was faithful. Faithful to God, faithful to his calling, determined to honor God in all that he did. And as a result, God blessed him. But God's blessing, God's lifting him up in due time, God's lifting him up according to God's standard, and God being gracious to him, did not make him immune from heartache and trial and tribulation and difficulty. That's a lesson that we need to learn. We get the idea, it seems to be popular in American culture, in particular in the church, that if you really love Jesus, everything's going to be well. If you really love the Lord, everything's going to go all right, and you're going to be healthy, wealthy, and wise. And that's just not true. If we follow the will of God, and if we're consistent in that, we're going to have trouble in a fallen world. We're going to have difficulties in a world that is filled with corruption. Doesn't mean that God doesn't bless. It doesn't mean that God isn't faithful and true to His Word. But it means that there is heartache and trouble in this life. In our text, we're moving toward Joseph's great achievement, his rise to power, his fulfilling the dreams that God had given him years before. But for 2 years, he's been in prison. For 2 years, he has languished as his good friend, the cupbearer, forgot all about him. You remember we looked at that last time about how he found himself in prison with these two leaders, these two cabinet people from Pharaoh's cabinet. And they both had dreams, and they were upset because they didn't understand it. And Joseph said, "Why are you so upset?" And they said, "Well, we had a dream." And he said, "Tell me your dreams." And then he interpreted them for him. "You're going to get out of prison. Well, you're going to die. You're both getting out, but you're going to go back to your service. You're going to die." The cupbearer said, "Thank you, and I am so excited about this." And he said, "Well, just remember me when you're back in your place of honor. Bring my person before Pharaoh." "Oh, absolutely no problem." 2 years have passed. He's forgotten. He's languishing in prison. In spite of that, God was at work. Now here's my question for you. Do you think Joseph ever struggled with believing that God was still working? 2 years is a long time. I told you, I'm not patient. If I want something, I want it last week. I need it as quickly as possible. I can't imagine 2 years I would be questioning. I would be wondering. Joseph was a great man. Joseph was a faithful man. Joseph was a man committed to the things of God, but he wondered and he doubted. That may surprise, and there may be some that disagree who are part of the Word of Faith movement, but he was a man of flesh and bone, a frail child of dust, and I know that he languished and I know he struggled. Yet he still trusted. His faith was firm. Faith doesn't eliminate doubt. Faith does not rule out questions, but it believes in spite of our doubt, in spite of our questions. And that's where we find Joseph. He rests in the one who holds his future. Didn't rest in his circumstance. He didn't trust in his feelings. He rests in the one who never changes, the one who is solid and secure. So as we consider his example, we're reminded that advancement under the divine economy stands in stark contrast to the world system. Three things, let me point them out to you. First, in verse 1 down through verse 14, in this divine economy, under God's law, under God's house rule, exaltation rests solely in the hands of God and His providential working. how you get ahead, how you advance, how you find yourself in a place of prominence, in a place of honor, rest in the hand of God. Now, that doesn't mean that your schooling and your efforts and all that you put into it has no bearing on it, but you get where you get by the grace of God. That's the perspective that we are to bring to the table, that we understand, regardless of what ability I have, regardless of what talent or strength I have, if I get anywhere, I get there by the grace of God. It is by God's work and God's providential working. Look in those first 14 verses. After 2 whole years, Pharaoh dreamed that he was standing by the Nile, and behold, there came out of the Nile 7 cows, attractive and plump, and they fed on the reed grass. Behold, 7 other cows, ugly and thin, came up out of the Nile after them and stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly, thin cows ate up the 7 attractive, plump cows. And Pharaoh awoke. He fell asleep and dreamed a second time. Behold, 7 ears of grain, plump and good, were growing on the stalk. And behold, after them sprouted 7 ears, thin and blighted by the east wind. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump, full ears. And Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. So in the morning, his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all of the wise men. Pharaoh told them his dream, but there were none who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, "Oh, I remember my offenses today. When Pharaoh was angry with his servant and put me and the chief baker in the custody of the house of the captain of the guard, we dreamed on the same night, he and I, each having a dream with its own interpretation. A young Hebrew was there with us, a servant of the captain of the guard. When we told him, he had interpreted our dreams for us, giving an interpretation to each man according to his dream. And as he interpreted to us, so it came about. I was restored to my office, and the baker was hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they quickly brought him out of the pit. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came in before Pharaoh." Our advancement, any achievement, any moving up the ladder, any advancement in any way is the result of God's providential working. 2 years have passed, and that's a long time to wait. Pharaoh had a dream. Again, God was working even through this pagan. And God was working through dreams. And the dreams greatly disturbed Pharaoh. So he called all the magicians. He called all the wise men. He took all the advisors of Egypt. And he said, "Interpret this dream for me." And he lays it out for them. And not one of them could interpret it. Now, honestly, when you look at this dream, you say, how could they not understand that? I mean, it seems pretty... I mean, I'm no prophet. I'm not skilled at the interpretation of dreams, but that seems fairly obvious. But it's God who opens the mind, and it's God who closes the mind. So nobody could figure this thing out. And all of a sudden, the cupbearer remembers. Now, how do you remember? It may well be that God supernaturally brought it to mind. I think, he never had forgotten. He was just waiting for the opportune moment that it was going to put him in better favor. Whatever the reason, whatever it was that caused this 2-year delay, he said, "Oh yeah, I remember. I had a dream and this Hebrew was able to bring him here." So Joseph is brought to the presence of Pharaoh. From the pit to the presence of Pharaoh in one day. It's an extraordinary thing. Now, regardless of what the motivation was, regardless of why it took him 2 years to remember, I think it's important to recognize that it was God who was at work in all of it. What would have happened if the cupbearer had told Pharaoh immediately? Joseph might very well have been delivered, but his deliverance would have been attributed to the cupbearer's graciousness. Or it would have been attributed to Joseph's wisdom in calling for the favor. As it was, it's the work of God. God gets the credit. God gets the glory for this deliverance. Pharaoh sends for Joseph. He's brought to the palace, all by the goodness and the grace of God. It is a difficult lesson for most of us to learn. But this is the direct outworking of the doctrine of divine sovereignty. God is at work in all things. And all things come about in God's timing. You know, it's easy when you're at a good point in your life, when things are relatively well in your home, when things are comfortable financially and all those kinds of things, it's relatively easy to have this deep, profound discussion on the sovereignty of God. And yes, God's at work in all things. It's a little more difficult when you just got off the phone and you're told it is a tumor and they're not sure how they're going to treat it, but they need to get on this quickly. But God is just as sovereign then as He is any other time. If the treatment isn't going well, and if your health continues to fail, God's still sovereign. He's still in control, and it's still moving according to His plan. All things work according to God's sovereign work, His providential working in all things. We're talking about life from a divine economy. How do things work in God's world? We don't always see it. We don't always appreciate it. But this is what God has revealed to us. This is what God is doing. God was at work even when Joseph was sure He wasn't. God is always at work. And we must learn to trust and yield to His sovereign hand. A second thing, beginning in verse 15. In the divine economy, all the glory belongs to God. The cupbearer finally says, yeah, I remember I had a dream. In fact, the baker and I both had dreams, and this Hebrew was able to interpret both our dreams, each one individually according to how they worked out, and they all did exactly what he said it would do. And so he's summoned, he's brought, and look beginning at verse 15. When Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there is no one who can interpret it. I have heard it said of you that when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Here's his moment. It's being handed to him on a silver platter. Now, I think one of the ways you need to look at this is your boss calls you in and says, nobody's been able to figure this out. I understand that you know how this works. How do you respond? Look at how Joseph responds in verse 16. Nope, I don't have a clue. I can't. But God can give the interpretation. The glory, the credit belongs to God. No, I don't have the power to interpret dreams. It's not a parlor trick. But I am confident that my God is able. I am confident that God can reveal, because I'm confident that God is at work in all of this. Now, he could have easily taken credit and no one would have blamed him. Everybody would have said, that's understandable, was natural, but he wouldn't do that. I am not capable of such a thing. And so as we continue reading down in the story, Pharaoh tells him his dream, and then he interprets it for him. The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has revealed to Pharaoh what he is about to do. This dream you had, they're one and the same. They're both talking about the same thing. And I've got good news for you. God's revealing to you what he's getting ready to do. God is revealing to this out-and-out pagan what God is getting ready to do. And he's using his servant to give him the interpretation. He says, you know, the plump, attractive cows, those are 7 good years. The plump ears of corn, those are 7 good years. The 7 ugly, thin cows are famine. And the ears without grain and blighted, Those are the 7 years of famine. It's all the same dream. God is revealing it to you. And here's what you need to do. You need to store up during the years of prosperity so that you can handle the years of adversity. God has been gracious to you. God has revealed to you what He's getting ready to do. And here's what you need to do. Put me in charge of everything and God will bless it. And what He said? He said, you need to search out and put a man who's capable in charge to oversee all of this to make sure that it's done. Again, it says something about the character of Joseph. He was trusting in God. In spite of all that he'd been through, in spite of all the heartache, in spite of all the difficulty, in spite of being forgotten and left and isolated and dumped upon and everything else, he still put his trust in God. He wasn't trying to manipulate the system for his own benefit. I don't think Joseph ever read Who Moved the Cheese. He wasn't sniffing and scurrying trying to figure out how to get ahead. He simply sought to be obedient and bring glory and honor to his God and leave the results in the hand of his God. God has made known His sovereign will. This is what you need to prepare for. He's more concerned with giving God glory than in gaining a promotion. The lesson that we're told consistently in the Scripture is that God honors those who honor Him. We saw that in Daniel. When Daniel and his friends determined that they would not eat the food of the king because there were things that they were eating that God had strictly forbidden them from eating, they said, we won't eat that. Oh, you must eat it. No, we won't. Give us the diet that we are supposed to eat and see if God honors that or not. God honored it. They rose to prominence. They refused to bow when the music sounded and give glory to the king as a god. And as a result, they're thrown into a fiery furnace, but they didn't even have the hint of smoke on them when they came out. God was gracious and delivered. Of course, I always need to throw in, when we talk like that, Stephen honored God too. And he felt every stone as it broke every bone in his body and crushed the life out of him. But Stephen, like the Hebrew children, like Joseph, was more concerned about the glory of his God than his own good. That's what it means to trust in the sovereign hand of God. To live out in practical ways your trust that God indeed is God, that He is in charge, and that He is moving things along according to His own perfect will. The third thing, in the divine economy, God's faithful servants are humbled by their exaltation. And we see that in verse 33 down through verse 40. Now therefore let Pharaoh select a discerning and wise man and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh proceed to appoint overseers over the land and take one-fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt during the 7 plentiful years, and let them gather all of the food of those good years that are coming and store them up under the authority of Pharaoh for food in the cities, and let them keep it. That food shall be a reserve for the land against the 7 years of famine that are to occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish through the famine. This proposal pleased Pharaoh and all his servants, and Pharaoh said to his servants, "Can we find a man like this, in whom is the Spirit of God?" Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Since God has shown you all this, there is none so discerning and wise as you. You shall be over my house, and all my people shall order themselves as you command. Only as regards the throne will I be greater than you." God exalted Joseph in his faithfulness. In spite of all of the heartaches, in spite of all the disappointments, God prospered Joseph at every turn. We never find any indication anywhere in the account of Joseph in the book of Genesis where it went to his head. We never find him lording it over anyone. He is a unique fellow. Even when his brothers come, he did not lord it over, but rather was gracious and merciful to them, so that he could even confess, "You intended it for evil, God intended it for good." The note that is consistently sounded throughout the entire story of Joseph is the note of God's sovereignty. Joseph outlined a simple plan for preserving the abundance and make it through the famine. It pleased Pharaoh, and so he's put in charge. He becomes the most powerful man in Egypt next to the king. He went from a prisoner to prime minister in one day. That's enough to give you whiplash. His life was a roller coaster, up and down and back and forth. Joseph was learning the truth of 1 Peter 5 in verse 6. If you humble yourself under the mighty hand of God, in due time, He will exalt you. We live in a world that is focused and committed and determined to achieve personal success, personal advancement, and personal glory. But as the people of God, we are called to a totally different standard. Our driving ambition and concern is the glory of our God. And we leave all the other stuff to His sovereign hand. So what that means in practical terms is, you got a great job, you got a position in your company where you are honored and exalted, then you need to thank God, because God has graciously put you in that place. And your question needs to be, what am I doing with what God has given me? How am I using this to His glory? Does that mean that you don't need to work? Does that mean that you don't need to study and that you don't need to follow the rules? No, you do all of that, but your motivation, that's what we're talking about, your motivation in all of it is the glory of God, not your advancement. You do what you do for the glory of God, not for the sake of a better paycheck, not for the sake of a greater position, but for the glory of your God and for the advancement of His kingdom and for the good of His church.
You've been listening to a Plowman podcast. Find us on the web at theplowman.org. The Plowman features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.